So we're here at Wolverhampton Races. Long time since I've been here. Last time I was, it was a jump track with Eddie Freemantle, well-known face on race courses for the last, well, more decades than I've been coming. Thanks, Eddie, for agreeing to do this. Can you tell us from the start how your interest in racing started,
please? Yeah, my mum used to take me racing when I was quite small, and I went to a point-to-point when I was about five and just backed some horses, and they all won, and so I got the bug for it. I think that's how it starts for a lot of people, doesn't it? They back winners, and they don't really want to stop again. And then I went to Ascot with her when I was a little bit older, and again I backed winners, the first three winners. I'm sure they were all favourites. LaSalle won the Gold Cup that year, so that would be going back to the mid or early 70s. And a horse called Balliol won one of the big sprints there. I remember their names, but I don't really remember much else about it. But the fourth race I do remember, I backed a loser and I wanted to go home then. And as we were going out of the race course, past the pre-parade ring, my mum saw this horse called Zarb, and she said, "That's going to win this next race. It looks fantastic." And I said, no, we've got to go home now. I'm fed up. I can't back any more losers. I can only back winners. And of course, Zarb won that race, and so that gave me an idea that looking at horses is a bit of an inkling to their possibilities. I mean, she was a very good paddock judge, although she didn't go racing very often. That's how I started, really, and it grew from that. As a teenager, I used to get all the books and study the form and have a few bets. Gradually, I got more and more into it.
So how did the journalism start? Because I do believe you were a fairly young man on the spot for the sporting life.
Yeah, that was a sort of second job I had. First of all, I met a guy on the train, a man called Ian Davies, who was the deputy editor of the Racing and Football Outlook. We were on our way to Ludlow, and we chatted, and we shared the journey, and shared the journey back. It's a long way back from Ludlow to London. I mean, you only have to go halfway when you go there, Simon, but it's still an old trek to Ludlow. So we got to know each other there, and he said, "Oh, well," a few months later, he rang me up, and he offered me a job at the Racing and Football Outlook. So he'd been impressed with me. He'd now become the editor in the meantime, and so he offered me a job doing some racing predictions, but also as a general sports tipster. And I was tipping all sorts of different sports, whatever. Sports betting was in its infancy, effectively, then. There was a lot of football, athletics, cricket, and various minority sports, and I really didn't know what I was doing, but I had to have a bit of a guess up and study the form for things, and even did the Booker Prize that year. This would have been the mid-80s, and from there, I went on to the sporting life and became a man on the spot at the sporting life. And I was there for 4 years before I went on to my own punting on the racecourse, mainly on my own.
Talking about your man on the spot, there's a little story that I wrote about a while back. Boot Scraper. And you inadvertently almost foiled a gamble there.
Yeah, I thought this might come up. Yes, a fellow called Stephen Flurry owned the horse Boot Scraper, and I'd seen him running in. He was trained by either John or Rodney Baker. I think John had finished by then. I think it was Rodney Baker. It was an ex-Irish horse. He had some very decent juvenile hurdle form in Ireland. Came to England, hadn't shown a lot, but it has shown enough for me to think that they're going to have a go with it one day. And I napped it in the sporting life. And Stephen came up to me at the races at Exeter that day. He wasn't very pleased. He says, "They tell me you're the one who's ruined the price." And I sort of had to think of some story to try and dissuade him from being extremely angry rather than just very angry. And I said, "Well, look, at least, Stephen, at least, you know, if he wins, there's not going to be too much of an inquiry because the racing papers have given him a good G." And that seemed to suffice a little bit. Anyway, Boot Scraper did win, and he wasn't too short a price. But it was a big gamble, and I may have spoiled their day a little bit, I suppose, but at least he won.
I think Stephen Little laid a 9,000 to 2, and it went off at 6 to 4.
Well, there we go. they got their money at 9 to 2. It wasn't so bad.
So apart from the bottom line, how do you suddenly realise that you've become a successful professional punter as opposed to somebody that just...
Yeah, well, ever since those days, I did have a period when I was only doing one thing. I was only punting, and then I could class myself as a professional, but I've gone back into the media a bit because I was offered a tipster's job at The Observer, and I took it mainly because it gained me the press badge and it was good value for me to have that. You'd be able to use the press facilities. Of course, nowadays there's Wi-Fi and so on. That's very helpful. And I still do a bit of media work for Racing UK, as you probably know, Simon. So I couldn't class myself as purely a professional punter. I back horses to make money, and I have a media career as well, and that's worked very well for me.
And one of the things I read when I was researching you, a few of your rules, this is going back a bit, fly in the face of everybody else, do chase your losses,
yeah,
and keep your betting, keep turnover high. Is that still...
That was a reaction, really, to these golden rules of betting that people say, never chase your losses. Well, if you don't chase your losses, you're never going to get them back. When I say chase, I don't mean go absolutely crazy and have large sums on to try and win your losses back, but... don't stop betting as a result of losing. You've got to keep going. If you think you're good at what you do and that you can make money at it, if you've had a few losers, it doesn't mean you're no good. It just means that the things haven't gone your way. And keep on plugging away. Keep on betting. What was the other golden rule that I...
You keep the turnover high.
Yeah, I think you sometimes I've got to force myself. I think there's a very low percentage takeout in racing these days. Most races are close to 100% or even overbroke if you're looking at the best prices available all day on horses. I think it's important to bet often, from my point of view. Some people haven't got that temperament. They're much better off having one bet occasionally. I feel like I want a bit more action. So some races I'll go, well, look, they're betting to no percentage. I really ought to get involved here, even though I don't necessarily fancy something. I still feel that overall, if you're betting when the markets are close to 100%, you ought to be able to win.
What you must have a strategy that has been successful over this, you know, all these decades.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of substitute for hard work, and nowadays I seem to work just as hard as ever because my memory's not as good as it was. I think that happens with everybody as they get older. So I need memory joggers. I need to watch videos and re-watch them. I don't sit down every night and watch all the videos from a day's racing. I used to, but I just... there was just far too much racing to try and do that and have a life as well. So what I tend to do is watch the videos when I'm at the races, watch the replays, and then catch up as and when I'm doing the cards. And of course you can do that now with videos on different websites. So I found that useful, but I'm aware that everybody else can watch the videos and it's harder to get an edge. So you've just got to work harder and going racing is helpful because I can see things in three dimensions, things out of picture, things in the paddock, things that people don't generally see when they're sitting at home. And that I find that helpful, and I've got into the routine of going racing nearly every day, so 4 or 5 days a week. So, and that, I find that a stimulation to my mental processes for doing a race, and I find it pays off in the long term, certainly.
So we're at Wolverhampton now. So yeah. I'm assuming that you've got a good opinion of all-weather racing, where some people have a little less...
Yeah, yes, I do. I mean, a lot of it is low grade. A lot of it is akin to dog racing that people might think. But I find it's easier in the winter, from my point of view, to get a handle on the form when there are only the all-weather races. I started off largely as a national hunt punter, and I've, for various reasons, I've gravitated towards flat racing. And through the winter I go all-weather racing. I've found that I can make it pay, whereas for a while national hunt racing I wasn't able to make it pay, and that's one of the reasons for the switch. The other reason is doing the work. To watch videos of national hunt racing takes 4 times or 5 times as long as to watch the flat racing, so that's another reason to stick to the flat. I think that mainly it's trying to specialise because there's so much racing, and that's what I've had to do.
And are you a meticulous person? Do you keep records of every bet?
Well, I do. Of course, when things start to go wrong, it's very difficult to write the minus on the spreadsheet, but it is important to do that, I think. And overall, you've got to keep records as much as you can, and not be true to yourself, and not try and make stories up about how much you're winning when you're winning, and forget about the losses.
So that was my next question. How do you cope mentally with a losing run?
It's difficult, and I think the very, very best punters just treat the money as a commodity. But it's one of the reasons that I like to be in the action all the time, because I feel that if I'm betting 4 or 5 races a day, I only need to back one winner and I'm probably going to be ahead on the day. And I don't have very long losing runs in terms of time, whereas if I were having large bets once a week, I would find the pressure unbearable, I think. I just haven't got the mentality. I think the very best punters don't even think about the money. They just want to try and get on as much as they can. And I'm not like that. I'm a fairly small punter in the rich scheme of racing, and I just want to make a few quid.
So do other sports figure in your portfolio as a making money betting?
Not properly, no. I have a few recreational bets on football, occasionally cricket, but no, I would say not. I think you've got to be really steeped in it to try and make that pay.
When I was doing my research, Eddie, it was going back probably about 9 years ago now, you said that the betting ring was in its death throes. Mm. Still going. Do you still believe that?
I do, really. I think it's the advent of Betfair and other betting exchanges and digital revolution, if you like, in betting terms, has made it very difficult for on-course bookmakers, and the prices are allied very much to what's happening off-course and not on-course, and I think they must be struggling, and there are dwindling amount of people actually coming racing to have a bet in cash, and that's understandable. I very, very rarely venture into the betting ring to have a bet, and I think it's sad in terms of what the atmosphere created by the betting rings has given to racing over the years, that it is dwindling. Of course, the big days, they're going to make it pay. The Royal Ascots, the Cheltenhams, the Aintrees. I think they're still that's their sort of where the bookmakers are likely to make the money to pay for the off days during the rest of the year. I think it's tough for them. I also think that the on-course bookmakers haven't really moved with the times in terms of digitalizing their service. And that probably has been to their detriment, but you know, that's a whole new argument, and it would take hours to talk about.
So, as a successful punter, what medium do you use to get on? How do you
bet? I'm generally betting I do have a few bets with a few accounts, which are gradually get eroded over the years. If you win, it's quite difficult to get on. But I do have a few bookmakers that still accommodate me, and I tend to bet quite late into betting exchanges.
Okay, just changing track slightly. You have been known as been a journalist in one way or another throughout your horse racing career. Do you think the print media now neglect racing, and why do you think they neglect racing, if you do agree, as opposed to football, rugby, cricket, and all the other things?
Yeah, it might be cyclical. It might be just that football is so readily available to the public now, and it's a much more simple sport than racing. It's just, can you put the ball into the net? And it's on Sky every day. It's on the satellite TV channels every single day. There's a football match, and we have racing every day. But you have to really graft to get a grasp of racing. I don't think you can really attract people to racing by dumbing it down, by changing the terminology, by taking the racing language away. I think that's good. In a way, it's good that racing has idiosyncratic ways that people have to learn if they want to get into it. And it's a grown-up sport, and I think trying to dumb it down is wrong. I don't know how you attract more people to racing, but the success of the, for instance, the Cheltenham Festival tells me there's still a great interest in racing. As far as media coverage is concerned, it's never been something that the racing or sports editors or newspaper editors have been very keen on, because it takes up a lot of space, and it is not a minority sport, but it's down the table from sports like racing, like football.
Talking of football, do you go and watch Fulham as much as you tweet about them?
Yeah, I still go and watch Fulham quite a lot. I mean, Fulham never win anything, they never have won anything, but they give Fulham supporters a great deal of pleasure. And of course, when you win, and you don't win very often, it means a lot more than if you support Manchester United or Liverpool or Arsenal or Chelsea or now Manchester City. They win every week, nearly.
Now, I remember working as a floor man for the dear old Jack Lynn, rest his soul, in the betting rings of the West Country. You and a gaggle of fairly sharp fellas being the scourge of the ring, including the chap we used to call Death Paul. What was going on back in those days?
Well, I met Paul. There's another person I met on a train. I used to meet people on trains, and now I seem to be travelling around on my own a lot of the time. And he's He's a punter from the West Country. He's moved to the West Country. He lived in Brighton when I first knew him. And a very, very dedicated follower of formal. He lives in Taunton now. He hardly ever goes racing now, but he still has a punt. And he and I sort of hit it off. And we used to think along the same lines, really. So we shared ideas and threw them up in the air. Quite often, because I was based in London, I'd be going to different meetings from him. But we would bump into each other down in the West Country, and we had a lot of laughs and a lot of success together over the years. But I wouldn't say he's retired now, but he doesn't come racing.
And there's several people you mentioned in other research I did. One of them I know has recently passed away, Racing Raymond.
Yeah.
He was a good friend. He was a bookmaker and a colourful character I knew of. You say something about him?
Racing Raymond, a very great friend of mine. I didn't meet him on the train, but I met him at the races all back in the 80s. And again, I mean, he had very strong ideas of how to be able to be a bookmaker, very old-fashioned in many ways, but somehow we hit it off, and he had a love of food and drink, and so do I. And poor Raymond, he keeled over on Boxing Day the year before last, and he lived to be 75. Considering his lifestyle, that was probably more than he could have expected. But he was a great character, a racecourse character, and he was an artist on the stool. I'm sure you'd agree, Simon. You'd have seen him in action on the Daily Double or on the forecast. And he had a lot to say. And I remember ringing him up one day and saying, "Raymond, we've got to back this horse for the Grand National." He said, "Oh, what price is it?" And I said, "It's 100-1. He said, "Oh, 100-1. I've never met a 100-1 winner." And this was Slim Pickens, who actually finished third. So he still hadn't backed the 100-1 winner. But the year before he died, we backed the Oaks winner at 100-1 together. And that was a 100-1 winner he backed. And he rushed to the winner's enclosure afterwards, shouting his old phrase, "Should have been favourite, should have been favourite." And of course, all the people who backed the favourite ridden by Ryan Moore that got beaten a short head were a bit perplexed by this, including, I might say, by the connections of the horse. But that was Raymond. He was a great character.
There's a couple of other characters. What I do remember, Dodger McCartney's another one.
Yeah, well, Dodger sadly was killed in a car crash some years ago, traveling between two racecourses. It actually wasn't that far from here, I believe, and he was killed in a head-on collision, and the man who was right driving the other car was convicted of causing death by dangerous driving and served a prison sentence as a result. It was an absolute tragedy. And Dodger had himself been in remission from throat cancer, so he was kind of felt he was living on borrowed time. But he was a fixture in the betting rings when I was growing up, and everyone wanted to know what Dodger had backed, and he loved it. He used to milk it a little bit. He had his ups and downs, but he was a survivor and a great character.
Another one, Johnny Lights.
Johnny Lights, one of the fearless punters I was talking about earlier, who, for him, money was just a commodity. He used to bet on football quite heavily as well. He had a ticket agency business that probably helped him when times were hard, but loved an odds-on shot, but he was as hard as nails and would put as much as he could on horses. And he had a long-running friendship with the big bookmaker Dudley Roberts, and they jousted in the ring a lot.
Some characters. Jimmy the Wig is one I didn't know about.
Jimmy Rogers, he was Jimmy the Wig because he used to wear a wig, and he professed to be a football agent as well in the early days of football agency. But he used to duck and dive at the races, on the trains, and play cards. I remember one day there was a clerk at William Hills called Lawrence Stone, who was a bit sharp at the cards, and Lawrence really gave Jimmy the Wig a bad time going to Folkestone one day and in the card school. I used to stand and sit and watch on the other side of the aisle, watch these guys playing cards. I never wanted to get involved. I felt they all had far too much experience for me. And that day, poor old Jimmy came off the worse.
Tick Up Stan's another one.
Tick Up Stan's, he died a couple of years ago. Tick Up Stan, he was a remarkable man because he used to be completely drunk every day of his life. And Tick Up Stan would be drinking all day and trying to find a punter to tell them the horse was going to win or a dog was going to win, because he used to go to the horses in the afternoon and then Wimbledon in the evening. And old Stan used to he was one of the old school spivs, really, is how you could describe Stan. He'd stand outside selling marked race cards in the car park, one of the last of a dying breed, I think. But how he managed to stand up at the end of the day and get to the dog racing when he'd been drinking all day was remarkable.
And one I have heard about, Johnny Raff.
Johnny the Raff, he'd been a gunner, I believe, in the war, and that's where he got his nickname from the RAF. And Johnny was another man who liked to drink, and he used to put on for people. He was a commission agent, if you like, I believe. But he was another character, and he had another sideline. He always used to have something to sell from his outings to Oxford Street, let's say. So he would, oh, I've got some lovely cashmeres here, son. I've got some lovely cashmeres. He'd always be selling something, John, if he wasn't in the bar having a large scotch.
Tony the Hat?
Tony the Hat was a guy from Croydon who went racing with his brother, who didn't wear a hat, so he wasn't called the Hat. His nephews still go racing. They love their jump racing. But Tony was a great character. Not a big punter, but a big character. He always wore a hat, and he looked a bit like the Pope.
Bob the Dog?
Bob the Dog was another similar character to Johnny the Raff. Always had some knocked-off gear he wanted to get rid of, and people would ask him to get the Timeform manual every year when it came out, and he never managed to get it because Timeform were a bit clever. They put it in a separate box for display, so he wasn't able to nick it. I don't know whether these sort of characters still frequent the races, people who shoplifters effectively, but there were one or two of them about, like Bob the Dog.
I was going to ask you that. Are there any other characters that still exist, that still come?
Yeah, there's a few. One of the lads who came up today, a guy called Roger, he's a big fan of yours. He's always at the races, and he often goes to Lingfield and onto Kempton on the train. And yeah, there's a few of us about still, a few who travel around from race course to race course, but not as many as the past when you could fill a carriage with them.
So that's slightly sad. Now, as a footnote, what would be the best bit of advice you would give for anybody 19, 18, wants to get into this game, despite all the negativity?
I think you've got to know whether you're any good at it first. I mean, I was a terrible mug punter when I first went racing and I first went to the dogs. But gradually I learned bad habits. I learned how to get out of bad habits. And I think in the end, you've got to have some sort of ability for backing a winner. The best thing I could say is do something different. Because if you're doing the same as everybody else, you're only going to come up with the same favourite that everybody else has gone for. If you've got an angle that you can justify or you can discover, that's the best way. And if you have got something different to offer, then you're going to more likely to be successful than not.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Eddie.
For the latest political betting news and odds, check in with our expert William Kajani at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.